This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
We are diving today back into something that is as raw as it is disturbing. Virginia Giuffre's posthumous memoir, Nobody's Girl. It is out there now. A lot of us absorbing it. It's a long read. It's a very powerful read. And we're going to continue to break this down. It's not just another retelling of the Epstein horror show. It is her full life story, from the first betrayal at home to the systematic grooming that followed. This isn't tabloid sensationalism. It's a psychological roadmap of how predators find, shape, and silence their victims. And joining us to continue, help us break this down, retired FBI special agent, former chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, Robin Drake. We're going to look at how Epstein and Maxwell built their web, how fear and coordinating turned victims into compliant participants, and what this memoir reveals about the machinery of exploitation itself. Robin, you finished the book. I'm about a quarter way into it. Walk us through why this book is a game changer for understanding sex trafficking, grooming from start to finish. I know this has affected you greater than a lot of other books on this topic and things that we've seen on this topic.
Yeah, even as you're reading the intro, Tony, I mean, it's hard not to get misty thinking about it. I mean, this book really shook. She was so transparent and so vulnerable from the very first pages of this book. It was shocking in a way that a behaviorist admires and is grateful for, because you know, we've covered these cases a lot. I've covered human behavior a lot. But she gave a granular detail about her life and the entire arc from her being a little girl all the way up through everything. So we got an understanding of her decision process, of her optics on life, of everything around her. And she offered immediately such a level of transparency and vulnerability, owning everything she did in life. It wasn't rose-colored glasses, like she's nothing but a victim. She talked about how she victimized others, which gives an amazing amount of veracity to everything that she says, because she was willing to disclose every nook and cranny of her life. And it was extremely compelling, disturbing beyond belief. It introduced me to, as I say often on the show and with you and Stacey and Todd, I'm not a conspiracy theory guy, although this book opened some doors of possibility for me. Is like, wow, this just doesn't make sense. Some of these things just don't make sense with what we're seeing. So anyway, that was my immediate effect of this whole thing.
Go ahead, Stacey.
Can I interject before we really get going here? We have a lot of women who are in our chat on a daily basis. At least I can tell from the names and the pictures. Yeah. I'm just assuming. So I want to kind of put a little bit of a warning out there. But Robin, from your perspective, since you finished it, for those of us, and I'm not ashamed to say I've been SA'd in my life. Is this a book that we should read? Could read? What are your thoughts on that? Because I didn't read it specifically because I felt I would get triggered, but I did watch an interview with Amy Wallace, the co-author.
Right.
It was about an hour-long interview of her talking about it. And to me, it sounds fascinating from a perspective of I could learn a lot from this. So what are your thoughts, if you don't mind my taking the conversation that way first?
Stacey, you bring up a great point. This can potentially be an extremely triggering book. It's probably the most granular of detail I've ever seen. And I was in the Innocent Lies Foundation as a board member, and we tracked down pedophiles and human traffickers of children. And I've never had anyone describe in such very, very specific detail exactly what was done to her from the very get-go. So I think you did a very smart thing. And I think if anyone is curious and is afraid of being triggered, dip your toe in the water first. Watch an interview, see how you respond to it, and take it lightly. Be able to reflect and have a conversation with people during this to keep yourself grounded if needs be. But it but as a way of, and the other thing you said of being important, I think it's extremely important. It really broadened my understanding and depth of compassion. And I feel myself a pretty compassionate person most days. Mm-hmm. It really deepened my depth of understanding because of this book. So I think if you're a victim of sexual abuse or trafficking, it's going to be triggering, and it'll be empowering, I think, to know that there's other women out there that are there on your side. I think some of the awareness of what they've been through might be good because of the whole collective mindset that you can come together. And she speaks of resources that she started, obviously, at the end of it as well. But at the same time, for those that haven't, people like me that care very deeply about protecting others and serving others, it is a very important read. I won't say mandatory because it is very disturbing. I don't recommend it to someone who can't necessarily weather the storm without some good, healthy people in your life. But it is very enlightening. Matter of fact, it makes you feel very compelled to want to do something because of the tragicness of this. I mean, just as an example, the estimate is that Epstein alone, and I know this from my stats of working Innocent Lives Foundation, affected, they think, anywhere between 200 to 300 girls. And that's profound if you now think about that pattern of life that then happens to them and the people in their lives. I mean, and she so accurately said it. It's like these monsters, and I'm going to get into the term I used for him and I came up with him for him, set a ticking time bomb at the very early stages of their lives. And every single day they have to weave around how to defuse that ticking time bomb that could go off inside of them at any day. And that time bomb of suicidal thoughts, self-harm, it's just profound. The words can't even capture how profoundly impacted it is. So to your point, Stacey, yeah, I think it's a good read. It's a powerful read. It's an important read. But if you're worried about it, dip your toe in slightly, watch a video, watch an interview, you know, get some more, a little more depth of field to see where down your own personal path you are, where you can kind of absorb more, because it is in depth, very in depth.
Thank you for that.
I want to start here because this is something that, you know, this book is out. People are absorbing it. People are hearing more and more of these horrible stories. How does it make you feel as, you know, obviously someone who was formerly in the FBI, as a human being, when you have the current director of the FBI saying there is no credible information, none, that Epstein trafficked women to girls other than himself?
He said that. It's easy to parse words. You know, I've heard him and Bongino both say numerous times, and I don't do politics on anyone, as you know.
I know, but I'm just saying, as a human, yeah, take politics out of this. It's just such a chunk out of that just diverts from reality, is what it is. It's not political. It's just, we know what the hell he was doing. How are we backing it up to here to say there's no credible information, none? It's like saying there are no stars in the sky. There's no credible information that there are any stars out there. None.
I don't know how. So if he said that, again, I apologize. I haven't heard him say that.
Sure.
If he had said that, or anyone said that, it's kind of ludicrous, because the lawsuits and the settlements they have actually showed that he trafficked. Matter of fact, Maxwell was convicted because she was convicted of trafficking.
Exactly. Then why is she in prison if they never trafficked anybody?
He was convicted of trafficking.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
And it was, you know, and you know, so you're talking about the powerful in this thing. You know, I actually did research. You know me, I love doing research when little things pop up. But what was interesting to me is that also on this whole weirdness of this, the likelihood of suicide by someone like Epstein, because they have that power control, is so remote. And you know, I'm not a conspiracy guy. So, and I love data points, and data points say someone like Epstein would not commit suicide, especially at the earlier phases of this. So if that's true, then what you need law enforcement to do to inspire faith and confidence and trust in organizations, institutions, you need to have full transparency
Yeah.
To say why this is data points an anomaly from what we would typically expect or see and have seen from past cases. And now here's the rub on it. The people that, and I don't know how you do this, the people that give you that transparency can't be from the same elite that just committed suicide.
There you go.
And so I would, so here's what Robin Dreeke, both average guy and former FBI guy and knowing more organization would love. I would love a GS-13. That's what I retired as. You have the GS-13, which is journeyman level, like spent 22 years as a special agent. I did go into management. So I ran our behavioral team. I stepped back down to be a street agent, you know, years before I retired. What I want to have, I want to have the case agent, that GS-13, talk about the case. I don't want an executive to talk about it. I want transparency. If we're going to see a data point anomaly, if they're looking to build trust and confidence in the things that they're saying, I want the actual investigator and the team, that those ground grunts, to talk about the case and take questions. The likelihood of you seeing that is no, slim to none, but these are not elites. These are people like me that were just trying to do the righteous work.
That's what just makes it insane to hear a statement like that. Again, this is not political. This is just ground level. Okay, if we're not going to play on the same reality team here, then, I mean, this is nuts. When people are absorbing this, they're going to look to their government. They're going to look for leadership. They're going to look for, okay, we have to accept this is what happened. And if we're pretending it didn't, we're just making shit up and erasing history at this point, if these are the statements being made by those that are supposed to be there to protect us. It's shocking. I mean, you can watch the video. It's out there. He testified to it. The exact words.
They keep it, it's interesting. Word modifiers. I always focus in on word modifiers. Yeah. We've covered this before, like when people use the word, before influence, any word modifier before anything. So anything saying credible information or credible intelligence, just saying credible means that they're using that as an excuse for what comes next. So they're saying they do have information. They do have data. They do have data points, but they're not deeming it credible from their optic. And so it's a word modifier before the actual word. That kind of stuff always kind of bothers me.
And it's not even like, okay, we're breaking this apart because we're protecting, like, anyone. It's like saying that to anyone other than himself. Like, I get it's not right, but if you're going to go, okay, well, there is other people, but just not this guy that you may be looking at. Like, come on. It's insane.
And so here's what you can also do. So sorry, Tony, that there's so much content here on this.
Yeah.
So herself. So here's another thing I looked up, because she even – was criticized because, the naysayers and people that are attacking her were criticizing her credibility, false memories and things like that. So I actually looked up testimony of credibility of testimony by people that are suffering PTSD and things like Virginia, Jenna, suffered is actually extremely accurate memories that she has. What's going to be, because of the way that it's imprinted on the memory, what happens is that timelines get screwed up, dates get screwed up, because that's the type of memory that she's disassociating with.
Sure.
But the memory and the images of the people themselves, extremely credible, highly credible. Because, and she even says it, she can't get rid of the images of someone being on top of her and what their face would actually look like. And so those memories are extremely credible. And so again, for someone to say that it's not, it just goes against all the science, all the research. And so not just one person's, and then you just look at her life arc of the disclosure she's having. I would think so here's what I would do. And here's what I did do when I was in the Bureau working my violations and the things I did in the world of counterintelligence and human behavior. I read everything I could. When something new came out, I consumed that information, because that's the path of wisdom, is gain information, put into practice, and hopefully you learn more. This is a must read. This is a must read for anyone working this violation, because it is so important to understand what the victims, because this was a book about the victims, what they go through and how they had to try to live their lives, not by the 5-second highlight reel that people try to manipulate outside and what they project to the world to try to show strength, but the internal things that are going on in them is what was really bone crushing to hear. And also the physical, you know, it's funny. I do so much research in so many different areas, and Body Keeps a Score is another great book that talks about the physical effects that trauma has on us. She was riddled with so many things physically as she got older and eventually died by suicide, presumably. Mm-hmm. And just those physical tolls, all this took on her. That's what these monsters, and monsters isn't even a word, that captures what this soul ripper does, that can't even capture the devastation that's caused this one person and everyone in their life as well.
Yeah, soul ripper is right. That, and we were texting about that, and it's like, how would we just you describe this? And soul ripper, and that's exactly.
I want to tell you why it's soul ripper too. You know, when I first started reading this, and you know, we'd even commented at the end of the last show about the word evil. He's evil, and I was like, you know, that word just doesn't kind of capture it.
Yeah,
evil. Evil's context. Evil can be seen scientifically, unscientifically, and it just doesn't. You know, people like Kober can be evil. Mm-hmm. You know, Rex Huerman can be evil, you know, mm-hmm. but what this non-human, I won't even call him human. What this non-human was doing was beyond that, because they take this soul, and it's not even from a religious standpoint, that what internally makes a human being up is what I'm calling a soul, and can be spiritual if you want. It can be anything you want it to be. It's what makes us up in here. Cause what they do and what he did was he took it. And he's ripping it apart. He's not stealing it. He's not killing it, because that would be too easy. He's literally ripping it apart, that this person now tries to have to hold it together and try to rebuild their soul. That's why I called it ripping, for the rest of their lives. And maybe mm-hmm. or maybe not, they're going to make it. So these people are just soul rippers, because that's they're destroying the internal makeup of these human beings that are trying desperately to hold them together in a world that's been turned upside down for them.
Let's get into some of the book early on, and I want to say this too. Her father denies any allegation that she makes in it that's addressed very early on, but she goes on to tell her story. But I wanted to get that out there. The book, it lays bare her early trauma at the hands of her father. She calls him the original betrayer in the book. How does that kind of parental betrayal, how does that set up a victim's entire life arc for predators like Epstein to exploit?
Yeah, it sets up a behavior pattern in numerous different areas. Again, I always want to caveat, especially when we start talking about this stuff like this. I'm not a licensed clinician, mm-hmm. psychologist, or any of these things. This is just pure observation and life reps of doing this and working with people in human behavior. But it sets up an expectation of what they can reasonably expect from the people in their lives, especially male in this circumstance. And it sets up a need to want to be approved and want to be loved and want to be cared for and want to be nurtured. And then it may also make you very cognizant of fear. And she was extremely fearful of her father, and she didn't want to be alone with her father. And then the father started trafficking her. So it sets up a pattern of behavior of understanding what the world around you is and what is presenting itself. And then also it makes you a problem solver at a very young age, because she's constantly having to solve her own problems. And what also happens, what I saw happening as she's describing it, she was doing a very good job of being a problem solver. But the problem is the quality of people that she had in her life, she had no healthy relationships on which to rely for problem solving. So she kept mm-hmm. she kept having to lean into more unhealthy people that were completely destroying her life, or become an agnostic to it, like she says her mother was. And she constantly then was seeking the approval and wanting to be accepted by these horrendous men, including her father, up until the very end. She kept trying. Here's this man she accused of raping her, of abusing her, incest, then trafficking her to her friend, you know, her father's friend, exchanging daughters. I mean, this is horrendous stuff. And yet she would never kick him out of her life.
Yeah.
That's what happens. And that's what that time bomb starts setting off. And so then people then have leakage of vulnerability. And it's not vulnerability or a weak person, but vulnerability of seeking to be valued and acknowledged by others and wanting to be approved by the people that you think are important in your life. And then people like Maxwell come around and they mm-hmm. can recognize it. and they can recognize a little bit of nonverbal leakage come out, and then they test, where are we at? Where are we at? Where are we at? And then they try to groom you, although the grooming they were doing was exceptionally fast, into this lifestyle.
Just the psychology. Obviously, the father's never been charged with anything. He denies all the allegations.
Yep.
But if we're going to go off of what she's saying and the claims, I mean, that and it's, I mean, just we're always trying to put ourselves in someone else's prism and someone else's mind. How are they thinking the way they are thinking? This is just one that is like, I don't know in any way, shape, or form, other than the word, you know, soul ripper or evil to describe. I mean, we're both fathers. We both have daughters. I do not in any way, shape, or form, I cannot do the mental gymnastics in any capacity to understand what the hell would be going on with a father. Number one, that would abuse their kid that way, but then to like give their daughter to somebody else for this purpose to swap. No. I mean, this is, it's just so, so insane. So like, what the fuck is going on in that brain that allows that is the modality and the choices that that person is making at that point in time. And they think it's a good idea, other than it is just something purely dark. It's inhuman.
It's
what
alien.
It is.
That's why it's not human. Yeah. It's alien. They are an alien species.
Yes.
And what makes it even more profoundly troubling that I've never seen in a case before is Maxwell.
Yes.
And so here's how part of this grooming and targeting process was Maxwell. So here's how they targeted her. She's working at Mar-a-Lago as a girl. You know, doing towels and being accommodating, and she loved working there. It was good training, good people. She said very good, very complimentary things. Nothing disparaging against Trump or the organization. Matter of fact, from what I understand, as soon as that they found out, because Epstein had another charge against him by someone, a daughter or someone at the club, and this is before anything legal happened, they actually kicked him out. So they did a good job. The organization did a good job back then of getting rid of him, according to what I've read, you know, in the book and everything else. But what happened was Maxwell was trolling because Epstein lived close to Mar-a-Lago. She's trolling there. She sees her. She approaches her because what Maxwell was doing was she was grooming them, giving them a feminine social proof that, hey, this is okay. I'm a female. You're a female. We'll be females together. And this is what we do to service poor Epstein, who's just, he's got too much sexual energy. You know, oh, you want to be a masseuse? Well, we'll give you some training. Come on and you can try right now how to be a masseuse on this very wealthy man. And look, it's okay because I'm here with you. Little did they know, she's a monster too. She was used for the grooming, for the social proof for the girls that she identified as being vulnerable. Then they trained the girls to go get more girls like them. In other words, hey, go find more vulnerable people like you. Oh my God, what a network.
I mean, the mental gymnastics that go on, I mean, and it's driven by fear. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you always say fear is the rocket fuel for compliance in cases like this. I mean, how would you say the book Nobody's Girl, it shows fear driving every decision that Virginia made, from recruitment to staying silent for years?
Yeah, she feared not having money. She feared being homeless. She feared not being accepted. She feared being retribution against family, against her brothers. I mean, and this is what they all get driven by. It's the fear of being cast out. And so what happens is these monsters are redefining what acceptable is. The speed of which they're able to do it, because what happened was Maxwell became that accelerator because she was female. The other females that were part of this cabal, given that 5-second highlight reel saying, hey, this is okay. Meanwhile, internally, they're destroyed. 5-second highlight reel to give that social proof because they're seeing other girls around. It must be okay. Everyone's doing it. It must be okay. And then they normalize it because Epstein thought this was completely acceptable. the rationalization he was given of, well, throughout times, you know, it was acceptable age for women to have carnal knowledge of other males is varied, you know, different states vary. So who's to say this isn't good for now? I mean, what the hell? He totally just regarded females as screwdrivers in their lives.
Can I interrupt for a second? Alicia made a really good comment, and it's something I thought about 10 minutes ago, and I don't want to sound like I'm defending Maxwell in any way, shape, or form, but could she have been a victim of 100%. Abuse when she was younger as well? Do we 100%. Know a lot about Maxwell?
Not as much. At least I haven't seen as much, because I knew she came up from a very wealthy family, mm-hmm. and that
which means nothing.
The father got in trouble, and they had lost, from what I understand, and because Jenna talks about this in the book a little bit, because they both Maxwell and Epstein wouldn't. She kept trying every now and then to probe to find out a little bit more about their background, and they immediately put up walls. But what she knew about Maxwell was that she did come from money, and the money was lost at some reason or however. But there's no doubt she came from a very dysfunctional household or place that taught her that this is the way we service men, because that's what she was doing. This was. I do not believe, pure conjecture, that this was a behavior that she learned from Epstein. I think this is what Epstein saw she was capable of doing, because she was already groomed into it before he even met her and became a perfect match.
It's almost scarier to think of Ghislaine Maxwell not being abused as a child, right? Sexually.
Yeah.
It doesn't give her grace. It doesn't give her any sort of excuse, but it gives you the recipe. You know, it's like, well, I mean, okay. I mean, that it explains the wiring to a certain extent, not all the way, but it's like, okay, they do. It does tend to repeat sometimes. But we don't know, you know, there is no information out there about her past to answer that question. But I mean, one would, you know, if you're putting money on it, I would certainly say she had to have been. But I think one of the things that makes Ghislaine Maxwell such an enigma to so many people, because she is a woman, and she, you know, gallivanted around with other women and you know, well known women, people that people respected at that point in time as well. And it was this, you know, society type woman who was out there doing these horrible things behind the scenes. That's the hard one to grasp. Why would a woman actively recruit other young girls to be victimized? And she knew they were being victimized, but she also, you know, allegedly participated in some of these victimizations, if you will, too, in the essaying. What's going on there? How does someone do that, especially to their own gender, that one would know the damage that this sort of shit does to people? Unless, was Ghislaine a weird specimen out here that was not affected by SA in a negative way? Like, in some way, shape, or form, was that a positive in her brain? And she's sharing this with, I'm just trying to wrap my mind around this, because it's inhuman. It is inhuman behavior.
She's never owned the behavior as being abhorrent, and she denies everything.
Yeah.
As I'm reading this, I know it's going to sound like a jump, but here's what goes through my mind. I've read a lot on World War II. I've read a lot on Auschwitz. I've read a lot about Hitler and how he did what he did. And I'm going to tell you, the imagery I got while I'm reading this book is that we have Hitler as his belief of eugenics and a superior genetic coding of white Aryan males against the Jews. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, Epstein was given himself as the superiority of the male gender against all the females, and you're to service me. And like Rudolf Göring was to Hitler, Maxwell was to Epstein, because they were all in on his line of shit about how we just have to service males. This is the way the life works. And his mind, I actually wrote this crap down. Because Jenna did a good job of quoting him sometimes. This is exactly what he said, that she said in the book. It's just the way men are genetically imprinted. Epstein thinks everyone acts like he does.
Wow.
Genetically, so as soon as I heard that genetically imprinted, what goes on in Robin's mind? Well, that's exactly what Hitler thought. This is just genetics. This is just the way it is. And so when you indoctrinate, or someone's already been indoctrinated, like Maxwell is that genetically all males act this way, genetically all females act this way. This is the way we survive as a species. I'm just doing my thing, you're just doing your thing, and we're all servicing the greater good. I think that's that line of, this is what cults do. They lie with this. I mean, just think about, this is a cult. Yep. The definition of cult is groupthink, person at the top, you have sexual deviance going on, it's for profit, and harm's being done. Those are the elements of a cult. So this is a cult mentality. You had the guy at the top, and you had his underling, which was Maxwell.
Yeah. No, I mean, it makes, I mean, it doesn't make sense, but it's part of the recipe, you know, it's part of the recipe for this sort of human behavior.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.